In celebration of the launch of this podcast, all of Andrea Pearson's book marketing courses are available at 50% off. Enter podcast launch, one word, at checkout. This deal expires March 24th, 2018 at midnight. Go to selfpublishstrongcourses.com for information on currently available courses. Thank you. Hi everyone, welcome to the Self-Published Strong Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Pearson, and I'm joined today by my husband.
Hi, this is Nolan.
We're going to be discussing Star Wars A New Hope today, but first we've got a quote for you and a continuation on our automation sequence tips. And the quote is by Winston Churchill, and it is, "Kites rise highest against the wind, not with it." Do you have any thoughts on that, since you picked it?
I don't know, it sounds cool.
It does sound cool. So, opposition in all things.
Opposition, yeah.
Yeah, when something is easy, I don't know.
If it were easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah, if it were easy, everyone would do it. I can't remember what the quote is. Something about men and river are made crooked by following the path of least resistance or whatever that is. Oh, the path of least resistance leads to crooked rivers and crooked men, something like that. Basically, if it's easy, everyone would be doing it, number one. And number two, it doesn't make you grow, which leads to success. And when you're forcing yourself to grow, then you're more likely to be successful. Our tip today is a continuation, like I said, of the automation sequences tip. And today I'll be talking a little bit about the first email that you'll send. And we'll talk later about reader magnets, but the purpose of this first email is to get them their freebie. So if you offer a free book in exchange for a sign-up, and I definitely recommend doing that because it doubled or tripled our subscriptions pretty quickly once I started doing it. And we'll talk about those later and best ways to, you know, have good results with that and the best things to give away. But you want this, your first email in your automation sequence, to be set up to send out immediately. And the very first thing you want to have in it is basically a hi, and here's a link to your freebie. And it's a welcome email, and it introduces you to them, but it should be a very, very, very brief introduction, if any introduction at all. At this point, readers are most likely more interested in getting their freebie than hearing about you, so keep the email short and to the point. You can basically tell them a little bit about yourself in it. For example, how often they'll hear from you, if you swear, if you use too many smiley faces, which is something I am definitely not ever, I've never been accused of. Anyway, I do use smiley faces quite a bit. It's just basically a way to get your foot in the door, so to speak, to let them get a feel for who you are in just a very, very little bit of a way. Anyway, I talk quite a bit more of this about this in depth in my automation sequences course, but basically every single sequence I've ever set up has been based off of this one that I'm going to be sharing with you over the next few episodes. And by the time all of these go live, you'll have all of them, all of the tips in order, so you'll be able to listen to them all quickly. We are recording this in February. What's the date today?
The 16th.
Yeah, February 16th of 2018. And so this week I've been working on, I finished the book cover for the fourth book in my Coven Chronicles. It's Crimson Hollow. And I also finished the cover for the third book in that same series. I wanted to get into editing the third book, but my brain's been, we've been all over the place this week, and my brain has been very detached, and I think I just need a little bit more separation, because I just barely finished the book last week. If any of you ever have questions, go ahead and send me an email at andrea@selfpublishstrong.com. If you are interested, you can support our Patreon page at patreon.com/selfpublishstrong, basically for awesome perks such as, you know, getting your questions answered and things like that. Anyway, like I said, we're going to be talking about Star Wars today, and yeah, let's get going.
I'm going to skip the opening crawl. You can just read it. It tells you everything you need to know.
And actually, for starters, I mean, it's the biggest and most successful info dump ever.
Yeah.
Because they just basically dump a whole, it's like a prologue.
Yes, it's quite a bit of information they're dumping, yeah. Okay, so opening scene of the movie is the rebel ship flying away from us, and then the Imperial Star Destroyer chasing after it. What does that tell you?
Action. That's what I notice. Like, they start in the middle of a scene. They don't start at the end or beginning.
Exactly. And it's a tiny little ship, right? And you're it's flying away, shooting, pew, pew, pew. And then you see this big ship come in, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it shows, you know, like, the rebellion versus the Empire, kind of encapsulated in one shot.
Yeah, the rebellion's tiny and limit. I mean, they have limits to their resources, and...
And there's this big juggernaut chasing them.
Yeah.
The Empire has a very distinctive color palette. Black, white, and red.
Yeah.
That's just carried throughout all the movies, but they're very, that's it, really. And, I mean, you know, the Rebellion has whatever, but they're very stark and,
contrasted.
Yeah, there's a lot of, everything's black and white, black or white for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a literal and figurative sense.
I did forget to give this little bit of information. The genre is space opera and space fantasy. Mm-hmm. And it was titled Star Wars, A New Hope. And the episode 4 bit was added in 1981, when George Lucas realized that it was successful enough. Well, they knew it was successful enough the first weekend to do a sequel. Everyone, including George Lucas, who went on vacation, instead of watching the premiere, thought it would fail. 20th Century actually had forced theaters to show it. They were more interested in watching or showing another movie that was releasing that year, and 20th Century had to fail to hold back that other movie if they wouldn't show it. And that was only 40 theaters actually agreed to show it across the country, which I thought that was interesting. Everybody, you know, I bet those people are really glad that they ended up showing it. Anyway, so my comment was the androids are dirty, so it shows that they've been through stuff, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
And it goes along with what you're saying, the stark contrast between the clean stormtroopers and then the dirty androids, and the fact that they're where the rubber meets the road, basically.
Right. Okay, my next scene is at 4:40 into the movie. And that's when, there's a battle goes on, right? So, like, you know, the good guys have, like, little pistols, and they're hiding, you know, against the sides of the hallway, and then, you know, there's an explosion, and the stormtroopers come piling through the hole. Mm-hmm. Right after that when Vader steps through, and he just, like, looks to the left, looks to the right of the bodies, and then just steps over them. Steps over them, and that tells you a lot about his character.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
Yep.
Yeah. And I actually have a comment that's right at that point. Princess Leia is in all white, and the ship is all white. The stormtroopers are all white. Darth Vader's black. And I remembered that the stormtroopers were actually intended for good when they were first created. And so their uniform is all white. And I don't know. I mean, a little correlation there, maybe.
Yeah. So we can tell a lot about his character just by looking at him and how he acts. He doesn't say anything. Already, you know, he's a pretty bad guy. Or a good guy, I guess.
Yes, I love Darth Vader. So does our 5-year-old.
Yeah, Elevator.
Elevator. And then I'm at the part where the droids, they jettison themselves off from the ship.
I have one thing before that. So, like, okay. Vader interrogates the captain of the ship. And he's holding him up with one hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he accidentally kills him. And then throws his dead body away because he can't answer his questions now. And... that's a little more explicitly bad guy stuff, obviously, but you see how strong he is,
mm-hmm.
how ruthless he is.
We learn his character, right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, the coldness, and he doesn't care.
Yeah, he's not subtle.
No.
About anything he's doing, and he just wants what he wants, and that's it. So yeah, at 7 minutes is the escape pod scene with the droids.
Yeah, so when the pod jettisons out of the ship, the guy's like, hold your fire, there's no life forms aboard. And my question was, and this is a little criticism, are their lasers limited? I mean, no, hold your fire, it'll waste your lasers. I think he should have just said, hold your fire, you know, or don't, hey, it's, he could have just said, there's no life forms on it, so it doesn't matter. But I'm like, we only have 5 lasers left, hold your fire.
Yeah, they're probably not going to run out of laser ammo anytime soon.
But the genre of this movie, having them start in the middle of action, you need to have that for a lot of these types of movies and types of books. You know, things that follow this genre, you want to have action start. And that's actually true of even romance. Romance, the action's different, but it's still, you need to have that intrigue or something happening. You don't want to just say, my character brushed her teeth, and then she did her hair, and then, I mean, establishing normal to a point, you know, but after that it just gets boring. You got to get into the action.
And they took care of that with the opening crawl.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the non-action-y bit that led up to the action-y bit.
Yeah, and I never read it anymore. Do you ever read it?
No. I mean, I know it is, like, you know, the rebellion and the thing, and then, yeah, you know.
Princess Leia's on this little ship, and
then Explodinus.
Yeah.
Immediately. So, anyway. Speaking of princess, mouthy princess. Yeah, she's, sassy.
Oh, yes. Yes, she is. She's our strong female lead. She has to be sassy.
Yeah. And she's way shorter than Vader.
Yes, she is.
So that...
David Probst, or whatever his name is.
Yeah, so they play a lot with that intimidation, you know, the Empire...
Yeah, they like push her up against him, and he's like,
yeah,
looking down at her
up to his like belly button.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his crony guys says, "She'll die before she'll tell you anything."
And he says, and, "Leave that to me," or whatever.
Yes. And then one thing Vader says right after that, so they realize that the plans might be on the escape pod.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "There will be no one to stop us this time." So they've been doing this for a while.
Yeah. Chasing them all around. Do they actually cover that in the movie? That
in Rogue One they do, but
okay. That's what I meant was Rogue One. Do they actually cover that then? I can't remember.
Well, the end scene in Rogue One is
the start of this
them,
one.
Yeah, leaving on the ship, and then,
yeah.
So he's been chasing them, but you don't know that at this point because Rogue One hasn't been made yet. So.
So therefore, and a little side note, they added in language like swearing so that this movie wouldn't be branded as a kids movie. It would have gotten the G rating otherwise, and so they added in a couple D words and H words to get the PG.
Never mind the bloody severed arm.
Oh yes, in the what is it called?
The burned corpses.
Yeah, I watched this movie when I was a kid. I didn't understand what the burned corpses were. It's really funny now looking at them. Like obviously that's what they are. But so I have a comment about the Jawas.
I have something at 9:05. That's when... So we haven't talked about R2-D2 and C-3PO much. C-3PO is a complainer.
Oh, I've got...
When they're on the escape pod, which I didn't mention back at 7 minutes. Are you sure this thing is safe? And then, anyway, at 9:05, we seem to be made to suffer.
Yes, you are. C-3PO, you were made to suffer.
And he was made to make us suffer in some cases.
Yes. He's like the Jar Jar Binks, except I would say he was better at it than Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, and he's a pretty like naive character,
idealistic, and
yeah, because like when
while
he's
being pessimistic,
he they split up, right? Because him and R2 have an argument, and he's like, "I want to go this way. You want to go that way? Fine, go that way." And then he sees some glint in the distance, and he waves at it, like, "Come pick me up," you know,
because he's expecting it to be a good glint.
Yeah, of course, exactly. And then R2-D2 gets captured though.
Yeah,
he actually gets,
because R2-D2 is a fighter.
Yeah, he gets shorted out and captured. He doesn't get walk right into a trap and get taken.
He's also foul-mouthed.
Yes, he's. I'm pretty sure he's swearing at
us. No, he is. He was speaking in English originally, and they took it all out, but left C-3PO's responses to him in, because they didn't want it to be that bad. Uh-huh. But yeah, he swears all the time apparently. But I love R2-D2.
So this part of the movie is kind of slow.
It is. I was actually kind of bored. I've seen this movie so many times.
I didn't realize how, yeah, empty of things it is.
Yeah.
Because they kind of get captured, and it's like 5 minutes of them rolling around in the sand.
And there's no dialogue, really. And
they just kind of show how, like, miserable all the robots are, which, why would you program robots to be miserable? They don't have to be. They could always just be happy about it. Anyway.
Side note about the Jawas, the language they're speaking is Zulu, sped up.
Interesting.
It's an actual language. Well, I thought that was cool.
But they do
No, I was just going to say at 17 minutes we meet Luke. That's where I am.
Oh, okay. 14 minutes. So at 14 minutes, they reunite. And, let's see.
R2, it is you. It is you.
Yeah. And then at 14 minutes and 55 seconds is when they say that.
It is you. It is you.
Yeah. So they're actually in the same sandcrawler for a while before they realize they're in the same sandcrawler.
Yeah. And it's sad because I have... A note here that says 14 minutes, and then I have a note here that says 17 minutes, meet Luke, and then a note here that says 18 minutes, first Luke whine. First of many.
Yeah.
And that's all I've got until 20 minutes when I actually...
Yeah, so it's like from like 9 minutes when they split up to like 17 minutes, so there's like 8 minutes where only like they just like meet again, and then they're happy about it for a while, and then that's the droid selling scene starts at 16 minutes 30 seconds, and that's when... They go to the Lars farm, And the Skywalker farm, I guess. And it's not Lars. It's Owen. Sorry.
Yeah.
Owen's Skywalker's moisture farm. And then the Jawas start selling them droids.
And do you think that this, I don't know, that slow of a beginning would, apart from the first scene where there's lots of action, but this, would that work now?
I mean, there doesn't have to be a lot of action. It's fine because they had so much before. It's okay to have a cool off, but it just...
Dragged.
I felt like when I was actually sitting there analyzing that period in the movie, that I was just like, why is this even in here?
Yeah.
It didn't need to be there.
No, they could have just had them get kidnapped and then go straight to, you know.
They could have condensed it into like 2 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess it's not that big of a deal, but it just felt kind of really odd pacing choice.
Just like my first book was. Because yes. Key of Kalenia had a horrible pacing the first quarter of it. This was George Lucas's first real hit. I mean, he'd done lots before then, so you'd think he would have learned already to get that out of his system.
Yeah. Anyway, we meet Uncle Owen. He's very gruff and decisive.
Mm-hmm.
He has no need Bossy. For protocol droid. Shut up, he says to C-3PO. And Luke whines. I also say Luke whines. I want to go to the stash.
But I want to go to the battle station.
Power converters.
You can go play with your friends after.
You can waste time with your friends.
Sorry.
Yes. No, he's very work-oriented. That moisture ain't going to farm itself.
Mm-hmm. I'm at 20 minutes. Where are you?
Yeah.
So Luke's reaction to
actually,
the info.
Last thing. So 3PO vouches for R2. Why should I stick my neck out for you?
Mm-hmm.
That'll come. I'm going to make a point
later. You'll make
later.
A point about, and I know which point you're going to make. So Luke's reaction to the information on the rebellion. He's like, you know about the rebellion? He's a small town boy in this random planet way on some part of the galaxy or whatever. Anyway, it just shows how big the rebellion is and how I would say that the Empire is not really holding things together if a small town boy is pro-rebellion, you know?
Luke's pessimistic about his situation. I'm never going to get out of here. If there's a bright center to the universe, you're on the planet farthest from. Just a couple of quotes from the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's excited about the rebellion. He asks, like, have you been in many battles? You know, that's the first thing he asks about. Have you heard about the rebellion? Have you been in many battles?
Mm-hmm.
So he's excited about that. And that's when he stumbles on the message that R2 has for Ben Kenobi, the partial message. And R2 lies to Luke about it, saying that if he removes the restraining bolt,
he'll be able to access the full message.
Well, yes, which keeps him there. He can access. And then Luke says, oh, you're too small to run away. Which is foreshadowing, because the first thing he does is run away.
Yeah.
And Luke's gullible enough to believe him.
Yes.
And then the message doesn't play. So.
And C-3PO is clueless. I mean, he doesn't know anything about what R2-D2 is doing. And even if he did, he would try to stop him, because that's his personality. And so R2 has got this special quest from Princess Leia, and C-3PO is not going to be able to stop him, you know?
Right. So R2's a lying, swearing
I love
sailor.
I love him.
And everyone's gullible enough to believe that he's harmless.
But look at him. He looks so harmless. He was my favorite character all growing up.
I'm sorry.
Why? He's so cute. All right, so we've got Obi-Wan Kenobi. And so it's the mention of him. He's like that little R2 unit was talking about old, and Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's thinking talking about Ben Kenobi. And the aunt and the uncle reaction shows us that Obi-Wan Kenobi is important, that they know who he is. And it just shows us that Luke is too distracted. He's, you know, he's totally doesn't even pay attention to their responses. You know, he's not paying close attention. Because if he were, he would know that they know who Obi-Wan Kenobi is. And they're like, oh, yeah, whatever, you know. And Luke is like, oh, he might be related to Ben Kenobi, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah, they give each other knowing looks, but he's like, oh, yeah, he died around the same time as your father. And he's like, he knew my father? So that means, he obviously calls them Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, but
mm-hmm.
Now we know his father is dead, or he thinks, anyway.
Yeah. Don't give any spoilers.
Don't give any spoilers. he knew my father. Now I knew Luke doesn't know his father is. So that's an important thing that's motivating Luke. So he's got a lot of interest in who his father was. He knows nothing about him, basically. Yeah. They don't talk about him very much.
And his aunt and uncle have been trying to keep him from becoming like his dad. So their goal is to keep him home, is to but they're not ever fully up honest with him. And even if they were, I think he would still push to get away, you know? So they don't tell him why they don't want him to go anywhere, why his uncle wants him to stay home for another season, you know? But even if they did tell him, there was no reason why Luke would actually stay.
Yeah. And Luke wants to go to the Imperial Academy, which is, you know, I guess his ticket off that rock.
Yeah.
Because he's... Because he stands up and says, and they're like, where are you going? He's like, it looks like I'm going nowhere. Yeah. And Luke's just not a farmer. He's got too much of his father in him.
And that's what I'm afraid of.
That's what I'm afraid of. So more foreshadowing about
his dad.
Naughtiness.
Naughtiness. Oh, yeah. So we already talked about that. He's too much like his father. That's what I'm afraid of. Yeah, the foreshadowing thing. And then I've got a 26-minute, and I'm sure you've got a comment there, too.
The looks sad and longingly at the binary sons.
Yeah, it's our hero pose, but it's a coming of age show, so it's a hero pose of angst.
Yes, the two setting suns.
The swelling, the music. It's telling us to feel for him. You know, they're trying to make us feel for our hero, who, by the way, Luke was supposed to be a girl, and Han Solo was supposed to be an alien. In George Lucas's original write of the story. And I don't think Princess Leia was involved at all. And I'm at 27 minutes.
Yeah, so they foreshadow the Sand People.
Yeah, I've got that here.
So they weave that in just before the Sand People show up, so it's not much of a foreshadowing, I guess.
No.
Like, R2 runs away.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in, like, one or two scenes previous, they said, oh, he won't run away, and then he runs away. They don't do the foreshadowing. A lot of this foreshadowing is like one or two scenes in advance.
But the dad is...
That's true, yeah.
It's a movie.
Well, there's longer arc stuff and there's shorter arc stuff.
That's true.
So like the big reveals, obviously, don't happen until later movies. But they thread the plots in early, like very early within the first, you know, 25 minutes of the movie. Out of, I don't know, 4 hours of movies. So
yeah,
they get right to that point. But anyway, he says, oh, we can't go out the Sand People. We have to wait till morning.
Yeah, it's too dangerous.
R2's causes a lot of trouble, and he says, Luke says, R2's going to, sure does cause a lot of trouble.
He's going to be the death of me. I don't remember. Yeah.
Oh, no. He excels at that, sir.
Yes.
Then why did you recommend him?
Because of C-3PO's whiny personality.
Ah! Why did you recommend such an awful droid to me?
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, pick that one. Oh, yeah, he's sure is a lot of trouble. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
So my comment, I'm at 28 minutes. And this is where they're in their little speeder. Yeah, and Luke says, hit the accelerator. And my comment was, why isn't Luke driving? If he's the one who's known for how good he is at all this stuff, why isn't he the one driving? Why is C-3PO?
This is a criticism I make later, but I can talk about it now. At no point does he demonstrate his skills as a pilot at any point at all.
Yep. Well, it's like that with Anakin. His only point of demonstration is an accident.
Yeah.
Besides the pod racing, which
was just boring and not interesting. Yes. Yeah. So they give him an X-wing at the end of the movie for the final battle with no flight experience.
Yeah.
On a suicide mission. Yeah, I would not do that if.
No.
Like, unless, like, they had literally nobody else alive who'd ever flown an X-Wing, then maybe. But I'm pretty sure they may have had somebody else. Because he had zero experience in an X-Wing, and he just makes a couple of mentions about how I'm not such a bad pilot myself, something like that. But at no point does he...
Ever show it,
and that is one of my...
I mean, C-3PO is a protocol droid.
The protocol droid's driving the dang car.
Yeah.
He should have, like, I don't know, done something cool in the car. Like, gone off a jump or something. I don't know. Like, oh, we can't make that jump, sir. And then he does it, and he's like, it's because I'm so good.
Yes.
And that doesn't happen. And that's my same criticism I have with Anakin, where they talk about he's the chosen one and so powerful, and then he never does anything more exceptional than anybody around him.
No.
Maybe he's kind of a good pilot by the third movie. They show, like, one scene where he's, like, blowing stuff up in that big battle over Coruscant, but... The main characters, they don't show them being that exceptional until he gets the Force, and that's only because everyone else doesn't have it.
So they're good at showing us how bad the bad characters are, but aren't showing us other skills that we need to see with the good characters. Like, why should we root for this character? We haven't seen him be rootable.
Yeah, he whines a lot. I guess we feel sorry for him because he's a poor bumpkin, but that's about it.
So we've got a false foreshadowing at 28 and three quarters of into the movie.
Okay.
Where they say, sand people or worse, and we never see what's worse.
Oh, yeah.
They hint at that and foreshadow it, but we never see what's worse. Mm-hmm. And that drives me nuts. I like or worse, because sand people aren't that scary, in my opinion.
No, they're not. Anyway, so at 28 minutes and 20 seconds, they find R2, and they say, yeah, we better go, sand people will be here. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I see one. And then the one's right in front of him, right?
Yep.
While Luke is fighting with that sand person, Kenobi shows up.
Yeah.
And you hear, like, a scary noise. So, Kenobi is like a Jedi master. He doesn't whip out his lightsaber and mow everyone down. He scares them away. Everybody lives.
Yeah.
Right? That tells you something about his character right away.
Yeah, but is it something that we want to be told about his character? Is that false?
No, it's not. He's non-lethal in most cases.
Obi-Wan? He's supposed to be lethal.
He's not in this scene. No, he's a talker.
Yeah, I know. I hate that. I mean, he's supposed to be a powerful Jedi Knight. He's not supposed to be some...
He cut some dude's arm off later.
Yeah. I agree. I would have put a fight here, you know? Like, something interesting to watch, you know?
I think it's funny. It shows his character. He's not Vader. He's diametrically opposed to him.
Okay, I see what you're saying, yes.
Vader would have just mowed everyone down. He doesn't. He just scares him away, and that's it. And, you know, everyone's fine.
Yeah, and also he lives there. If he just mowed them down, they probably would have come back in greater numbers, as he says.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe they're just defending their territory. They don't deserve to be mowed down.
Yeah.
But anyway.
He's a major character in the series, and he's only in the first half of the first movie. What's his name? Alec Guinness, is that his real name? Yeah, he didn't want to be known for this role, his Star Wars role, so he actually bartered with George Lucas to arrange for him to die early on so he could be out of it, and yet he's still known for this role. I mean, I don't know him in anything else.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay, I don't know him in that either. Anyway, so all the other main actors were nervous around him, like Luke and Han Solo, and the little bit of trivia I read was that they would goof off, and then when he'd be on set, they'd all act very professional, and then when he wasn't there, they would goof off again, and the director liked it when he was there because everybody was on time, and...
That's because he's a serious actor.
Yes. Okay, where are you?
I'm still in here. So R2 says he belongs to him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't remember owning any droids, which is odd because R2 was all up in the first three episodes, whatever, continuity error. And he says, Luke asks him if he knows who Old Ben is, and he's like, oh, no one's called me that in a long time.
He's like, of course I know who I'm in. It's me.
It's me. So that means he's been, you know, maybe hiding or something like that.
Yeah.
He hasn't gone by that name.
For how old is Luke? 18?
Yeah, something like that. So for 18 years, at least, or exactly, because we know that he leaves and goes to Tatooine right after he's born. So anyway, there you go. And they go to Kenobi's place, right? So that's at 32 minutes, 40 seconds.
And I'm at 32 and 50, where C-3PO says, you go ahead, I'm done for.
Yes.
And the personality of the droids, you know, C-3PO is, as we've said, he's a whiner, he's a complainer. He's a protocol droid. This is where the comedy comes in. He's a protocol droid who's being thrown into action. Never once does he do his job, like what he was created for.
He's a fussy butler.
Yeah, and never once does he actually do that. Every single time he's doing anything, he's under stress, including when he's in... Jabba the Hutt's place. He's actually doing what he was hired for or what he was created for, but it's not in ideal circumstances. So he's still in a comedic position.
His fish out of water.
Yeah. So R2-D2 is like calm, cool, collected. Always knows what's going on. And C-3PO is the opposite.
So yeah. So Kenobi knows all about Luke's dad, and Luke's super interested in that. I like how like Uncle Owen and Anakin like never talk. But it makes it feel like they had a relationship of some kind.
Uncle Owen and Anakin?
Yeah.
From the first movie?
Yeah, like, you know, they just hand Owen the baby.
Oh, Ben does, I see what you're saying.
And it just makes it sound like they had, like, a history, like, Owen and Anakin, when they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives him his... Like, he doesn't waste time with, like, this Force stuff. He's like, oh, yeah, you could totally, like, be a Jedi and stuff. It's like, did you even check to see if he could move anything?
Yeah.
Here, have a lightsaber. Right?
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, I don't know, maybe he was secretly testing him when he was younger, because he's been around. Like, he knew about Bold Ben.
Yeah.
He's met him before, or at least seen him before. He knew enough to know that he was around.
Yeah, he's probably followed him, you know.
Yeah, well, they're neighbor-ish. Yeah. Neighbors-ish.
That's the whole reason he's there, is to keep tabs on Luke.
Right. They don't really go into how he did that, but that seemed kind of incongruous, but that's his whole job.
Yeah,
pretty much. The last 18 years has been him making sure that Luke is fine.
Yep.
So, anyway, then he forks over his lightsaber.
Yeah, and we get our first history lesson on it.
Yes, it's from a more civilized age, before the Dark Times, before the Empire.
Yep.
And that weapon's very different than the blasters everyone's been running around with, actually. So, it's a very... it's a departure from the weapons that everyone else is using. They're using blasters, this is a lightsaber. You know, those were civilized times, these are not.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're too distracted. So we're getting a history lesson on everything, but we're too distracted by our first introduction to a lightsaber to really pay
attention.
Everyone's
just staring at the glowing stick.
Yeah, which it's pretty cool. I love, you know, the special effects for that.
Yes. And then Obi-Wan lies about Vader. You know, he was a pupil of mine that betrayed and murdered her father. Anyway, and then the full message from R2 plays.
Okay, so we get some character development with Obi-Wan and Han Solo, right? So Luke is whiny and hopeful, and Luke basically is a plot device, is what I've decided. Is the whole purpose he exists is to move the plot forward, because he doesn't really have a personality, and I'll complain about this later. I mean, there's nothing... He doesn't really grow. I mean, he does in his knowledge and understanding, so there's some character growth there, but in the very, very end of the movie, we don't really see him go from whiny until all of a sudden it's just he gets his ship and he's not whiny anymore, you know?
Yeah.
He gets what he wants and he's perfectly content. The grass was greener for him.
Yes.
On the other side. Actually, there was actual grass on the other side.
Grass instead of a desert, so I guess that's...
Yes.
So the scene with the Death Star.
Yep.
It's basically the same.
Oh.
You must learn the ways of the Force. We talked about that. And he's too old to do it. You have to come with me. He's trying to convince him to go. And he's like, I can't. I have to help my uncle. And he's like, oh, that's something your uncle would say.
That's your uncle talking.
Which makes it sound like Ben and uncle know each other, which they do, of course.
Yeah.
And you must do what you feel is right. Which is just a very patronizing answer, I guess.
Yes, yes. A little bit patronizing. It's kind of like a cop-out, too, you know.
Yeah.
It's like he knows it's what's going to happen. He doesn't fight that hard, you know.
No, it's like, oh, yeah, your family's going to be murdered soon anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Because he's not shocked at all, and anyway, we'll talk about that. That scene is coming up, so we'll address
that's a good
then.
Scene to talk about, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got the ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force, and that's foreshadowing, because destroying a planet is huge, and yet they don't ever show the Force doing anything cool like destroying a planet.
And he does something very small. He chokes a guy, like...
From long distance.
From, like, 10 feet away.
Yeah.
He doesn't blow something up. It's just a subtle thing.
Yeah.
By comparison, anyway. Yeah. It's not that subtle in that situation.
Not to the guy who's being choked.
Right. And, you know, he just... and you see the relationship
between him and...
Vader and Tarkin, where Tarkin's like, release him. And he does. He's like, as you wish.
And oh, and well, Princess Leia later says, I should have known he was pulling your leash, you know.
Exactly.
General Tarkin.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Oh.
Well, okay.
Peter Cushing, okay?
Peter Cushing. So you see their relationship. It's not really... Vader doesn't seem like that subservient to him. They seem like that he is inferior, I guess it seems like.
Who's inferior?
Vader is to Tarkin, because he's
in
like...
the roles of... But I don't understand how that worked, because the Empire, you know, the Emperor is Vader's boss, and the Emperor's in charge of the whole place. So how is Vader, you know, inferior to... I mean, he's like, as you wish. You know,
he doesn't, like, obey. He just, like, does it on a whim. He's not like, yes, sir. He's like yeah, okay, fine.
It's a different order. I mean, he's the Force, and the Emperor's of the Force, and so... It's like kind of a spiritual order rather than a militaristic or whatever.
Yeah, Vader's not like part of the normal chain of command, I guess. And like Tarkin's like, leave my guy alone.
Yeah.
He's like,
I actually really like Tarkin. I mean, I was sad that he died.
Sorry.
Well, he was too confident. It was his confidence that killed him.
His arrogance, yes.
Literally.
Oh, yeah, this is one. So, 39 minutes, 20 seconds, they're back on Tatooine. They come across a sandcrawler that's been destroyed. Only Imperial stormtroopers are so precise.
Oh, yes, and...
Nothing in this movie portrays stormtroopers as competent in any way whatsoever.
Yeah. Those blast shots are from stormtroopers.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. They're like, sand people wouldn't do this. We were made to think that sand people did it. Stormtroopers did it because they're so awesome. No, they're not. They're the least competent. And this is famous. They're famously incompetent.
Like hitting their heads when they walk through doorways.
Yes. To make them, I guess to make the good guys seem so awesome, the bad guys look like complete morons.
Yes, that's not good story writing, though.
No, yeah, it's not the best, yeah.
You need to have your bad guys and your good guys. You've got to write bad guys that are impressive. Otherwise, them getting beat is...
Not
pointless.
A thing, yeah. They just mow down, like, a million stormtroopers. And, like, their whole, like, reason for existing is to shoot other things, like, when they get told to. And they can't even do it.
Well, they're the red shirts, you know, they can die as much as we need to. It's Vader that's the oppressive.
Yeah, they're all faceless, identical, pretty much, cannon fodder.
Yeah. Which is okay. You want to have people like that so you can kill them.
They're space orcs.
Yes.
Okay, so then, then he's like, oh no, Imperial Stormtroopers, they're after the droids.
Which would lead them to home.
And then Luke runs off, and Ben Kenobi's like, no, don't go.
And he doesn't really
He's like, no,
him.
Stop. Yes. Don't go. And then...
He's like, whatever.
And so then, you know, Luke does go back to his house, and he sees the bodies of his aunt and uncle all burned up.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a sad...
And I want to make a comment about that.
He has a sad, he turns his face away,
mm-hmm.
and then...
And then we never, ever hear him mention them ever again.
Ever again.
He's not sad, he doesn't mourn. These are the only parents he has ever known.
He mourns for part of a few seconds.
15 seconds.
Not even that. He, like, just, like, turns his head and looks down to the side, and then he's like, screw it, I'm out of here.
Yeah, and then he, like, just goes back, and he's like, what's his face? It's like, there's nothing you could have done. And that's all. I mean, he doesn't mourn him on the ship. He doesn't mourn him once, you know, at all, ever.
And, like, Kenobi, like, knew.
Yes.
And, like, did nothing. He's like, hey, wait a second. Maybe, you know, I can use my super seeing the future powers or something. Because he was aware of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't there, but he figured it out that they were dead already. It's pretty awful.
Yes.
Everyone's such a sociopath. It's not good. And then Luke's like, totally got what I wanted, so I guess I should go.
Yep, you know, it drives me nuts. That was one thing that... Actually, I learned that. I mean, who was it? The Riff Tracks actually pointed that out, and I was like, they're right!
Yeah, it's pretty jacked up, actually.
It is. You know, that's... You know, when a major character... I mean, you've got to show that the pain. Otherwise, it's meaningless. Yeah. And then you get a character who doesn't mourn, and then people don't care about that character.
As far as he knows his parents are dead, and then his adopted parents are dead. Like,
yeah.
And he's just like, eh.
He's like, well, I guess I don't have to stay for another season. Woo!
He's like, all right, no emotional baggage now. Yes. I'm out of here.
Yeah, but that makes it so hard for people to relate to him, which obviously it doesn't matter because this movie...
This is one of the greatest sci-fi movies, the greatest, the highest grossing... most memorable sci-fi movie of all time. So,
but the problem is if writers try to base, if they try to do this, they're going to fail. There's too much, you know, there's too much competition out there.
There is. Yeah.
So you have to make your stories, you have to make your characters believable. And a character who has a mom and dad figure that get brutally murdered, I mean brutally murdered, and he doesn't show any sort of emotion towards them for longer than a few seconds, that's really bad.
Yeah. Princess torture scene.
Yes, that's it. Yes.
There's not, they don't really say anything, do they? I can't remember.
No, I mean, Darth Vader just steps in, there's no comment, and then upping the ante.
Yeah, the
so
interrogator
we see
droid.
The seriousness of her situation.
Interrogator droid floats in with a big syringe, and it just zooms in on the syringe.
So we know that it's going to be...
She lingers there, and she just has that look on her face, and the door closes, and the trooper walks away.
Yeah.
It's very abrupt.
And my question is, what's in the needle? What's in the syringe, Nolan?
Truth serum, or... ouchy stuff.
I was hoping you'd actually know your Star Wars knowledge.
Sorry.
Do we need to text your brother and ask him?
Yeah, you were talking to the wrong one.
His brother knows pretty much... His brother knows what color vests people should be wearing throughout everything. We'll eventually have his brother on, I think. Mm-hmm. come and talk with us. Like when he comes down or when we go up, we'll have him come in and join us for a conversation because he's also a writer and he and Nolan do business things together and he is definitely into movies.
Yes.
Luke changes direction really quickly. He's got no sense of revenge, no sense, no desire to vindicate his aunt and uncle's death. He's just neutral about everything.
He's going to go learn to be a Jedi like his father.
Yes.
That's all he cares about. Oh, yeah. Dad? Oh, okay, I'm going to go do that.
Yep.
And they decide to go to Mos Eisley and find a ship to go to Alderaan.
Yeah. And we've got Obi-Wan doing something weird with his hands, and Luke, he's like, something's going on, but he doesn't quite figure out that it's because of Obi-Wan. I'm like, he's kind of dense.
Yeah. So they get pulled over by some stormtroopers that are looking for the droids, and of course the droids are sitting right there, and Obi-Wan waves his hand, and the stormtrooper just...
These are not the droids you're looking for.
Yes. Oh, these aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along.
Yeah, move along.
And they do. And so, again, he uses a non-violent talkie method.
Yeah, that's
true.
To
get what he wants. So he doesn't have to blow stuff up. He's just like, nope.
That's true. I mean, it's the least amount of drama needed to get through things. It makes for boring storytelling in a book, in my opinion. I like big and explosions and things like that.
Well, it's still demonstrating his character and how different he is. Than it's a real contrast.
Between him and Vader. That's true. And you don't want him to do something that's big and explodey because that wouldn't be true.
It's out of his character.
Yeah. All right, so I have a comment on the aliens in the bar. They're almost all humanoid. How do you feel about that?
I don't feel good about it, but I understand.
They had a limited budget. They couldn't afford crazy things.
Yeah, they go farther in some of the newer movies.
Yeah, Jabba the Hutt was a good departure from humanoid.
Yeah, they try to, yeah, because it's a lot of work. So I don't blame them, but...
They just had to be able to put a mask on people.
Yeah, I have a pet peeve in sci-fi movies where every alien race is humanoid with, like, 10 fingers and 10 toes and 2 eyes. And they, like, Star Trek especially, where they just have different bumpy foreheads, and depending on what alien, and, like, they have slightly different skin colors. And yes. Then,
different ears.
Yeah.
And teeth.
Yeah, just, like, easy prosthetic stuff. I get it. Especially if you're going to do a TV show day in and day out. You know, it's a lot of work.
But I mean, some of those costumes took hours to put on, so it's...
No, they totally did.
It's not expensive work, but it is.
Yeah, so I would like to see more different stuff. I guess it also makes them more relatable, but...
Yeah, we'll talk about cowboys and aliens eventually, but I mean, those aliens were very disappointing to you. I remember that.
Yeah, they really are.
Yes.
They're really disappointing. Anyway, so... But it is a great scene because it just shows how big the galaxy is.
Yeah, because you see so many different races and species.
Up to this point, how many aliens have we seen? Jawas?
Jawas and sand people. And
sand people are actually humans wearing masks.
Are they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So that's actually what they
really
are.
In the extended universe, anyway, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Anyway.
Nicholas, you can correct us if we're incorrect.
So we haven't really seen... I mean, even when you do see the sand people, they're wearing masks.
Yeah.
So, and Jawas, you don't even see they're just little beady eyes
in
their hoods. Yep. This is the first real scene where we get, like, this whole spread of how big this galaxy, how involved it really is. And there are just tons of different kinds of aliens and humans and whatever.
I love that they're like, hey, we don't serve their kind here.
Oh, droid prejudice.
The droids. You know, they're not okay with droids, but they're okay with everything else.
And that tells you where droids fall on the scheme, in the grand scheme of things, anyway.
Yeah, they're pretty low.
And you see that as, like, they show Mos Eisley and you see droids working and, like, how they fit into things.
Yeah, it's true. Producers in the studio were uncomfortable that Chewie was naked, so they tried to get them to design a pair of shorts for him to wear.
Well, that would be hilarious.
It didn't work, and so they decided to get rid of it. But they were to, you know, till the end, they were uncomfortable that he wasn't wearing pants. And so my point here is you need to tell the story that needs to be told and adjust as needed for the market. So if you're writing about kids, writing for kids, then, I mean, put clothes on them, right? But, or, and then, like, the level of graphicness, you know, you write for the market that you're writing for. And a little example from my Mosaic Chronicles, the last book, or not the last book anymore, but book 5, it's halfway through the series. We've got the scene where the boyfriend is is being controlled by the great ones, and he is about to cut the kidney out of his girlfriend. And in an earlier version of the book, I actually had him succeed in cutting the kidney out. And my beta readers, they're like, that was way too graphic.
She lives.
She does live. You know, you don't need both kidneys.
You don't need both kidneys.
Anyway, so I ended up editing that so that he only cuts her instead of taking out her kidney. But anyway, so you write the story that fits, you know, for your reader's expectation, the level.
We skipped the arm cutting off part.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
This scene also shows how naive Luke is, because he's like, tugs on the guy's shirt, he's like, I'd like a drink, please. And those guys mess with him, and he's just like, gonna get killed.
Yeah, pretty much.
So Obi-Wan steps in, he's like, oh, leave this poor kid alone, let me buy you a drink. So he tries to talk him down.
Yeah.
And then somebody draws a blaster, and then boom, pulls out his lightsaber, cuts the guy's arm off.
So once things get ugly, he's
this
fast.
This is his first real act of violence.
Yeah.
He tried to be nice.
Yeah.
And they didn't go for it. And then they got violent, so he just whips out his lightsaber, cuts the guy's arm off, and then he holds it there, and he's like, see this? I got a lightsaber, and everybody's just like...
They turn and they go back to their own business, and they ignore him.
And they pretend...
But that also shows what a situation that city's in, the fact that they just all ignore, you know, a whole bunch of violence. They just go mind their own business.
Yep. They probably haven't... Just a hypothesis. They probably thought all the Jedi were gone. Plus, he's totally dressed like a Jedi. He's wearing the robes.
Yes, he's got the robes.
He just rolls up in there wearing his Jedi robes and whips out his lightsaber, and he's not... For all the subtlety he's demonstrated up to this point in the movie, he doesn't even bother to, like, not wear his uniform.
Yeah. Yep.
He's like, I'll just wear my Jedi Master uniform all the time.
But, which, to me, I mean, watching the movie, I had no idea that was what he was wearing. I just thought everybody wore robes,
But they would know that. I mean, everybody else would know that. I mean, they're pretty famous at one point. It's only been 18 years.
Yeah, but were they established being his Jedi robes at this point? I mean, did George Lucas know that he was wearing his uniform, or was that just what they gave him to wear?
I mean, that's what they wear later, so, I mean, it's, I don't know, it seems
so they established it later, possibly.
Yeah, because they all kind of wear that, and then in the earlier movies, they mimic it, but...
Yeah, it's true.
So maybe it was, like, just a design timing thing, but in retrospect, it's just, like, a red flag.
Yeah, no kidding.
It'd be like, oh, well, me wearing this Nazi uniform? You know, in the opposite direction, but it's like, it's so iconic that you just can't get away from it. And if somebody were to walk around today wearing one, they would get some looks.
Yeah, they would.
Especially definitely. If they walked around with the weapon as well.
No kidding.
Like,
all right, let's go until they take off, and then we'll start the next episode where, at that point.
Oh, actually, I'm at 47. So okay. They meet Han Solo.
Yep.
And they make their deal. They dither their dithering.
Yeah.
I'll pay you this, I'll pay you that, you know, whatever. And then they agree, and then Luke and Kenobi leave, right?
Yeah.
And then Han turns to Chewie and says, this could really save my neck. So right away we know he needs the money for something else. It's not just a regular job for him. He needs it. He's in trouble.
We also know that he's out for himself.
That's true as well. He's not like, I hope those guys get to Alderaan safely.
Yeah,
he's
no
like,
kidding.
He's like, I need the money.
And we've got the good cop, bad cop between Luke and Obi-Wan. I mean, Obi-Wan's like, yeah, we can pay, and Luke's like, we're not going to pay that much.
I'm not such a bad pilot myself. All evidence to the contrary. Or no evidence at all.
Yes. And, okay, so Luke sells his speeder. He doesn't care. No emotions, no energy, nothing. I mean, probably
I'll never be back, he says.
Yeah, he'll never be back, but that's...
I'll just leave the whole farmstead to rot. I'm not going to just, like, tell my next of kin and turn it over to them, like, their relatives or something.
No, and I'm like, is he not... I mean, any teenager with a car, you know, his speeder, they'd be like,
He sold his hot rod.
And he was like, meh.
Yeah.
Going on to better, bigger things.
Han runs into Greedo, green guy, the Rodian. Yes, I know all these things.
who's a bounty hunter.
Who's a bounty hunter, looking for him. And he's like, hey, I've almost got the money. That we were just talking about in the right before then.
Yeah.
That he needs. So this danger is real and close. An immediate danger that he's in. Like, he really needs that money because it's a problem. And Han shoots first.
No discussion there, okay?
I'm
so annoyed that they try to tone that down because that's his personality, you know?
It really is.
He's, out for himself.
Yeah. So he just blasts the guy. And then says, sorry about the mess, and gives the bartender a coin.
Which I've got a comment about that. Okay. Sorry about the mess. Here, have a coin. Here, have a penny. Here, have a quarter. You know, I don't know anything about the money system, but...
It's enough to hire somebody to clean up the mess, and it's hire housekeeping.
I don't know. A dead body. Legal issues. I mean, maybe they don't
it's most likely they don't have legal issues.
Yes. Like, yeah, but I wouldn't... I would expect more than that. I'd be offended.
He's nicer than Kenobi. Kenobi just cut a guy's arm off and let him bleed on the floor and didn't give him a coin.
I thought he gave him something.
I don't think so.
No?
No, he's just like, what? You all want to mess with me? I got a lightsaber. That's it. So I think Han's nicer than Kenobi. He at least offered to pay for the cleanup. The princess resists the mind probe. So just like the guy said earlier in the movie that she would rather die than tell them anything.
Yeah.
So they torture her, and Vader's like, wow, I really didn't think she would resist. But she does.
It's because she's a Jedi. She's got strong blood in her. Spoiler for the third movie.
Spoiler for the third movie. And then they set the Death Star sets its course for Alderaan.
Yeah. Okay, so when the stormtroopers are going around looking for the droids and for Luke and all that, they don't know they're looking for Luke. They're just looking for the droids. But they're going through these like storage units or whatever, and there's one that's locked, and they're like, door's locked, move on. And I'm like, they can't do anything about that?
Hey, that's the one they're in.
No kidding.
Hey, let's check the locked one.
Door's locked. Move to the next one. Really? A locked door? And you're like, it's just impossible.
Hey, stormtroopers respect private property.
Apparently. Han. Okay, so we've got Han talking to Jabba. Everybody knows this was added later. They filmed it when Jabba was still a human being. And this is something that we can do. We can look at this as authors. So they added this later, and they did a re-release, right? Look at Bella Forrest's Shade of Vampire. She actually wrote that, and I think it was like half the length or a quarter of the length, and she had a lot of reviews that said they gave her negative reviews because it wasn't long enough. Well, she went back and re-released it, and look at how well that series is done now, you know? So, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with going back and relaunching and rewriting, re-releasing, changing things. I mean, I would say that this probably doesn't add a whole lot to the story, you know, but... Just the fact that you can do it, it definitely works.
But we do have some foreshadowing here because they linger on Boba Fett.
Oh, that's right. The camera pans past him.
And it holds on him for a while, and then that's where it switches. So it kind of lets you know he's not in the rest of this movie at all, but he is in the next movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the third movie.
Yeah, George Lucas. I don't know, remember.
But yeah, he's all up in this, and so that's some foreshadowing there.
Yeah, George Lucas put little things like that throughout the whole first movie because it was originally supposed to be one movie, but it was a 200-page screenplay, and he didn't want to condense it, and so he focused for this movie on the first third and didn't know if he'd ever be able to write sequels, but he left those little things in, you know?
Just in case, and we were lucky because it worked out.
Exactly.
Space ponchos.
Oh, when Luke puts on his poncho?
Yeah. I don't know why, I just always thought that was weird.
It was the 70s, ponchos, you know.
I never had a poncho.
Well, your parents didn't love you.
I had a leisure suit. They sure did.
So. You also had Luke Skywalker underwear. Yeah. Underoos.
I had TIE Fighter cereal, too, so...
You were such an adorable little boy.
I'm from the 70s.
79 was when you were born. You're not from the 70s.
I'm from the 70s.
So I've got a comment at 56 minutes. Are you
55?
Okay, go ahead.
That's when the docking bay scene starts. So docking bay 94, where they agree to meet in the cantina.
Yeah.
Han is not afraid to shoot stormtroopers as soon as he pretty much sees them.
Yeah, I love
it. He just pretty much opens fire. He shot first. Huh. Again, he shot first. So I think we've reinforced that part of his character.
Yep.
That's all I got.
The rogue. You know, women love the rogue. They love the bad guy. They want to tame the bad guy. And I'm not talking 50 Shades of Grey. You rolled your eyes.
We are talking 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, we did just bring it up. All right, so we've got... Okay, so just a little a little comment on Harrison Ford. He absolutely hated the dialogue. His quote was, "You can write this crap, but you can't say it." And apparently Alec Guinness also hated the dialogue. And if you pay attention to Han Solo, most of his dialogue is like 5,000 words long, and he's like rushing through it, and you can tell he's like trying to get it out. So read your dialogue out loud. Make sure it sounds natural.
He is a bit wordy, I suppose.
He is, like, and people talk over him. The other characters, they're like trying to get their words out, and so they talk over him. You know, I've noticed that this time. I didn't you know, the last 3,000 times I've seen this movie. And so, my next one's we're actually pretty much out.
So they get on the ship and they fly off into the outer space.
Yeah.
And they have a brief fight with some. They blow up a few four TIE fighters.
We can talk about that the next time, because sure. we have left the planet. So the next part of the movie will be talked about in the next episode.
Okay.
Do you have any closing comments about what we've talked about?
Hooray for the classic Star Wars movies!
I know they're good movies.
I think the new ones are just trying too hard. I guess I don't know.
We still haven't seen the very newest one.
I know.
I didn't mind Rogue One, and I didn't mind the last or the.
I think they're okay.
Not the last Jedi. I don't know
if we want this in the episode or not, but
we'll talk about them in their own episodes.
I feel like they're like the Transformers movies, where they're just trying to capitalize on my childhood.
Oh yes.
And just make money instead of giving a crap.
Yeah.
I think like they give a crap aesthetically, but I don't think they care about the genre.
Yeah.
Like at all, so they don't make it fit in the genre, but they're like, but it looks like Star Wars. Like, all of the designs look like they could fit in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but the characterization and the plots aren't.
Yeah.
So I hate them.
Okay.
There you go. That's it. That's
your final comment.
There's only 3 Star Wars movies. That's my comment.
Okay.
Episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Well, okay, so I don't think I have any final comments. Just watch your dialogue and make sure, like, do foreshadowing and speed up the pace. People don't have the patience anymore for slower-paced movies and books. Sometimes they do, but it's a lot harder to sell, which, if that's what you write, then, you know, write what you're good at.
It's pay attention to your genre rules, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Know when to break them and when not to.
Yeah, and understand what you're...
So, mostly don't for a long time, I guess.
Yeah, the first few books don't break genre rules because you're just shooting yourself in the foot until you've established yourself. Though, of course, you know, there's always exceptions to everything. And, I mean, some people do have breakout successes on really random off-the-wall books. But, I don't know, I think it's better to have a slow build than a fast breakout because you can't replicate breakouts. You know, it's depressing to have a breakout book and then not know what you did.
The one-hit wonder.
Yeah. I don't want to be that. I want to be a long-haul author. So, anyway, all right. So, where can people find you, Nolan?
At home or at work. if they know where those are.
I forget. I always ask that, and then I'm like, wait a second. He's never online.
I'm never online. Sorry.
Yeah, that's why we actually picked I write under my maiden name. Andrea Pearson is my maiden name, not my legal name. And we'll probably never say Nolan's our legal name on the air. But he likes to be faceless and behind the scenes and not attached anywhere on the ether webs and internet. The ether webs. Anyway, if you have any questions, go ahead and email me at andrea@selfpublishstrong.com and go check out the free courses that we offer at selfpublishstrong.com and our Patreon account at patreon.com/selfpublishstrong.com. And yes, there is a theme here. selfpublishstrong.com. Anyway, we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.